Welcome to CPAC Today in Politics. Coming up, Justin Trudeau and Donald Trump speak about the dispute with China.
We discussed some of the challenges that China is presenting, not just to Canada, but to different sectors of the global economy. And we certainly agree that we will continue to work together as friends and allies to resolve these and other issues.
The new North American Free Trade Agreement is on the agenda during the Prime Minister's visit to Washington.
Well, this will be the largest trade deal ever made. And it won't even be close. If you take a look at the numbers, second is so far away, you don't even call it second. So it's very exciting, and very exciting for Mexico, very exciting for Canada.
And Ontario Premier Doug Ford makes big changes to his cabinet at a time when some speculate he could be a factor in the federal election.
After a year in office, we made some changes, as you saw, to make sure that we have the right people in the right place at the right time to move forward in year two.
It's Friday, June the 21st. I'm Mark Sutcliffe. Let's get right to the top political stories this morning. I'm joined by author and op-ed columnist for the Chronicle Herald, Dan Legere. Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Dan.
Hi, Mark.
Let's talk about the Prime Minister's visit to Washington, and there were many different elements to this. One of them, of course, is the fact that President Donald Trump is saying he will speak to President Xi of China at the G20 summit about the Canadians who are detained. Do you think we can take the president at his word on this?
Well, I hate to sound cynical, but I'd never take Donald Trump at his word on anything. I mean, if he even remembers that this subject came up with the Canadians, I'm sure when they all go to the G20 that somebody in the Canadian delegation will send over a little aide memoir or note of some sort to the Trump administration, reminding them of the president's undertaking to bring this up. Trump is probably the only person in the world that really has leverage with the Chinese. And their disputes are so complicated, and they involve such massive resources, and there's so much on the table that it's hard to see the Canadian situation as anything other than a sideshow, and I'm sure that's all the Americans see it as. I think we should appreciate the fact that Trump has at least agreed to consider doing that, and we'll see if it ever, as he likes to say, we'll see if it ever takes place.
Yeah, I suppose it is a positive step that he's on the record as having said he will speak to the Chinese authorities about this. But you do have to wonder whether it serves Donald Trump's interests or not to use some capital with the Chinese to free a couple of Canadians, as opposed to continuing to apply leverage to the Chinese to get them to do what he wants on trade.
Well, and I mean, Donald Trump and his administration, certainly feel completely free to manipulate the U.S. Justice Department and their legal and border systems, to their heart's content on all kinds of topics. If Trump really was concerned, why doesn't he drop the extradition case against Meng Wanzhou, which has got Canada dragged into this mess in the first place? We could almost barely remember that. It was back in December when the Americans requested that the Canadians pick her up, this Huawei executive who was passing through the country, and started this whole diplomatic impasse between Canada and the Chinese. So, Trump could probably arrange that with a phone call and let her go on her merry way and let everybody else settle down and concentrate on matters that are more important. But now it's gotten more and more complicated. Canada can't back down without losing face. And the Chinese just appear determined to laugh off all of our interventions because we don't have the kind of leverage that the Americans have with them.
The other big subject on the agenda yesterday, of course, was the new North American free trade deal. And the Prime Minister and the President, of course, don't have a lot to talk about on this because they're on the same page. It's really Nancy Pelosi that the Prime Minister has to convince. Do you think any progress was made while the Prime Minister was in Washington?
Well, one can only hope. He was meeting with Pelosi. I mean, they have a lot in common. I mean, their political agenda, I think, of Nancy Pelosi and Justin Trudeau is very, very similar. Although trade is the one area where they would part ways, with the Democrats, you know, traditionally being not big fans of liberalized trade, and the you know, the Liberals in Canada, of course, like every Canadian government, have been pushing hard for it. But you know, Canada did get some legislation in place, at least by the end of the parliamentary sitting. The Mexicans have already passed it, and it's up to the Americans. That's the big stumbling block, and I think Canada's got a lot more work to do with Pelosi and the Democrats and the Republicans in the in Congress in order to get this through. It may come down to the fact that it just never does quite get approved while the Trump people are in office, because there's too many other irons in the fire now between the Democrats and the Trump White House.
Right. All right, let's talk about this huge cabinet shuffle that was undertaken by the Ontario government of Doug Ford yesterday. This is provincial politics, of course, but Ontario is so important in this fall's federal election campaign, and many people felt that Doug Ford was a liability for Andrew Scheer, and that his declining popularity since he was elected just over a year ago could be a factor in the election. This was a major shakeup. The finance minister, Vic Fedeli, is out after 1 year. Caroline Mulroney and other high-profile cabinet ministers were moved to other portfolios. We don't often see a shakeup like this 1 year into a government's term. And you wonder if what impact this might have on federal politics if indeed Doug Ford was going to be a factor this fall.
Well, I mean, Ford is a factor in federal politics, whether he likes it or not. Ford is part of this conservative front that is opposing, carbon pricing and other types of environmental measures proposed by the Liberals. The fact that he can't even keep a cabinet together for a year doesn't suggest a lot of tidy thinking on behalf of the conservative movement in Canada. I mean, you know, this isn't the typical way, the typical setup between the feds and the provinces when it comes to partisan issues. Jason Kenney and Doug Ford are just as important, if not more important. They're better known than Andrew Scheer is among conservatives and among Canadians who are going to be voting in the fall. So I think this this bit of silliness of, you know, with the Ford government not even being able to get through 1 year of a cabinet, I mean, rejecting a finance minister whose budget only passed 2 months ago, looks absolutely incompetent. And, is this what the conservatives are bringing to the table? Is this the new conservatism, the populistic conservatism that's being promised by Andrew Scheer and Jason Kenney and Doug Ford? So this has got to raise questions in the minds of many people about the competence of this movement, considering that one of its leading exponents, Doug Ford, can't even keep his own cabinet together.
As we wrap up a season of Parliament, the final session of Parliament before the election in the fall, apart from perhaps a short-term gathering in the summer to ratify the new North American trade deal, what are your thoughts on where everybody stands going into the summer and the election campaign that will follow?
Well, it's got to be a very unsatisfactory situation for the Liberals right now. Probably glad that Parliament is rising so they can gather in war councils to figure out the next steps. I mean, it's been an absolutely terrible year for the Trudeau government. The Prime Minister's own credibility, I think, is been damaged and has to be repaired. The party itself, I think, has to reassert itself a little bit. I don't think they can trust Trudeau's instincts as much as they have been. And, so they're really at a crossroads, and they have to get their act together if they're going to face the electorate in a few months. That said, I mean, it's not exactly all rosy, horizons for the Conservatives or the NDP either. So, there's a long way to go yet before the election. The Greens are emerging. They're popping up, like flowers all over the place. And so there's a lot on the table, and there's a lot of change happening. And this summer is going to be busy, I think, for all the parties. They try to figure out some way to get set for the election in the fall. I think it's wide open right now.
All right. That leaves one very important question still unanswered, Dan. It came up yesterday at the White House when Justin Trudeau was sitting next to Donald Trump. It's come up elsewhere as well. Will the Toronto Raptors visit Parliament Hill, or will they go to the White House to celebrate their NBA championship?
Well, this is an obviously huge diplomatic question, Mark. You know, the Raptors are Canada's team. The country has embraced them like no other team that I can remember. And, since the Team Canada hockey days. And, so I think it'd be perfectly appropriate for them to come to Ottawa for a nonpartisan, inclusive thing where everybody gets to go and shake their hands and hold up the trophy and all that, not just Trudeau and the Liberals. And show what Canada's all about. And whether they go to the White House is hugely in doubt because, like so many teams these days, a lot of the players don't like Trump and they don't like what he represents, so they don't want anything to do with him. And, this is one of those funny things that don't really mean anything but do when you think about it in terms of what the Raptors represent to a lot of communities in Canada. So, hey, they're Canada's team. Why not come to Canada's capital? I hope they do.
All right. Good stuff, Dan. Thank you so much for being part of the podcast this year. I appreciate you joining us today and every week. Thanks for your time.
Okay, Mark. Thanks for the call.
That's Dan Legere, author and op-ed columnist for the Chronicle Herald.
There are almost no details in their plan. But if you talk to economists, you talk to people who are trying to parse through and understand what this fake plan actually means, that no one believes that this is going to be serious in terms of reducing emissions for heavy emitters.
Now, here's what political columnists and commentators are writing about today. At CBC.ca, Aaron Wherry makes the case that Andrew Scheer's climate plan leaves a lot to voters' imaginations. Wherry writes, "There are many words in the Conservative climate plan, but none of them explains at any point how much the federal Conservatives hope to reduce greenhouse gas emissions through this plan. It does not account for how they would do better than the Liberals or how they would even maintain Canada's current path. Much is left to the imagination." In Maclean's, Andrew McDougall argues, while the Liberal climate plan doesn't do enough, the Conservative plan does even less. McDougall writes, "Now that Andrew Scheer has finally unveiled his plan on climate change, voters will at last have the chance to determine which plate of not enough is more to their liking. Scheer has clearly made the calculation that doing even less than Trudeau is good enough for his immediate electoral purposes, if not the planet's long-term prospects, as voters' claims to be concerned about climate change have historically outstripped their desire to act. Is the Conservative strategy cynical? Yes. Is it smart? We'll see." In the Toronto Star, Thomas Walkham argues that Andrew Scheer has failed to deliver a realistic climate change plan. Walkham writes, "Scheer is right when he says there are ways to fight climate change without imposing a carbon tax. Unfortunately, the Conservative leader hasn't found them. His climate change plan, released with much fanfare this week, is a mishmash of ideas, some good, some irrelevant, most ineffective. He had a chance to come up with a realistic climate change plan that does not rely on carbon pricing. He squandered it." Now, here's what's coming up on Canada's political agenda. Senior officials from the Prime Minister's office will hold a special technical session this morning to brief reporters on the Prime Minister's participation in next week's G20 summit in Japan. CPAC's Martin Stringer has more on that.
Mark, the G20 summit is being held in Osaka, Japan at the end of next week, and it will be a notable contrast to the summit held this time last year, the G7 summit, which Canada hosted in Charlevoix, Quebec. Then, you might remember, we witnessed a meltdown which saw President Trump denouncing Prime Minister Trudeau as weak and dishonest after the U.S. president stormed out of the summit. Well, at this G20 summit, Canada is counting on President Trump to act as a crucial ally. Yesterday, during his visit to Washington, Prime Minister Trudeau obtained a commitment from Trump to raise the issue of two Canadians who've been detained for more than 6 months now by the Chinese. Trump said that he will, quote, "do anything I can," unquote, to raise Canada's concerns when he meets with Chinese President Xi in Osaka next week. And, of course, our concerns aren't solely focused on the detention of those two Canadians, but also on the mounting trade pressures that China is deploying against our economy, including a virtual boycott of billions of dollars worth of canola, and now growing threats to our soya, pork, and beef exports. But obviously, we are not hoping for any miracle solution, not as long as China is intent on punishing Canada for detaining a senior Chinese high-tech executive whom the Americans have asked us to extradite to the U.S. to face criminal charges.
Thanks, Martin. Also today, the Prime Minister and Cabinet Ministers will meet with national Indigenous organizations in Gatineau, Quebec, followed by a Cabinet meeting. This evening, the Prime Minister will attend the Eid dinner hosted by the Canadian Muslim Vote. Minister of International Development Mariam Monsef, Immigration Minister Ahmed Hussein, Border Security Minister Bill Blair, Minister of Small Business Mary Ng, and Science Minister Kirsty Duncan will also attend. In Toronto, People's Party of Canada leader Maxime Bernier will announce his party's candidates in Metro Toronto and the surrounding regions. And that's CPAC Today in Politics for Friday, June the 21st. And it's our final edition of the podcast for this parliamentary season. We'll be back in September when the election campaign begins. Until then, thank you for listening. Have a great summer.